Jerry Bader Show, 9:35. There was a fairly significant story last week. It got a lot of statewide coverage. We didn't take it up all that much. And then we did not tell you how it concluded. Jason and I disagreed on this. This was the story of the suspended Sheboygan Falls basketball players because they were on the front page, I believe it was, of the Sheboygan Falls News. Anyway, they were in the Sheboygan Falls News, and one of them was flashing what Jason was sure was a gang sign. And at one point, they were suspended from playing. We never followed up on this. Yesterday really would have been the day. The school board did reverse that decision, if you're not aware. I want to share this with you from the Sheboygan Press, their editorial on this. It came via a circuitous route, but the right decision ultimately was made in the flap involving a photograph of three high school basketball players in a Sheboygan Falls newspaper last week. First, they don't want to name the competition. There's only one newspaper in Sheboygan Falls. Anyway, typical Gannett. Anyway, the story of the three brothers went viral after Jordan, Juwan, and Jamal Jackson were featured in an article, now they mentioned, the Sheboygan Falls News, that included a photo of the trio in which Jordan and Juwan were alleged to have displayed gang symbols with their hands. The Sheboygan Falls School Board, police, TV stations, newspapers, and even the ACLU joined the fray after it was announced that Jordan, a varsity player, and Juwan, a junior varsity player, would be suspended for last Friday night's game against Plymouth because of the photograph. Allegations of racism and unfair treatment flew, while school officials cited safety concerns in recommending the suspension. After further review by all parties involved, however, the board decided to lift the suspensions and allow the youngsters to play. The players, along with their parents, were able to prevail on the authorities, including police, that no harm was intended, that the boys have no gang affiliations, and Jason, tell me if you believe this last part, and that the symbols in the photograph were a playful mimic of a three-point signal used by pro basketball players. You do not accept that. This situation could have turned ugly had not cooler heads prevailed. In a police report made available to the media, at least one member of the Jackson family questioned whether the photo would have become an issue had the three brothers been white instead of African American. It is a valid question that school and police officials were quick to answer in the negative. They said race played no role. I'm going to be honest. I don't believe that. If three white kids did this, Jason, do you think they would be suspended? Be honest now. Do you think if this was three white kids, do you think this would have been the same result? I don't know. I don't know. But I think it's a valid question. We don't blame the authorities for reacting after the potential gang element to the photo was pointed out, presumably by an outside school liaison officer. With sensitivities high to the rising flood of school violence, anything that poses a potential threat should be thoroughly checked out. School officials and police officers did their due diligence in this matter. So did the youngsters and their parents. They could have acted the part of outraged and wronged members of society, but instead politely answered a series of questions put to them. They consistently maintain innocence of any gang affiliations. The students and school district have complied with all requests for information from authorities and even the media. It is difficult to determine how actively the ACLU will pursue the matter, but it appears to be a done deal from the perspective of other parties involved. We believe that extra applause Jordan Jackson received from fans when he entered Friday's night game in the middle of the first quarter is a sign that the community is behind the family. We also trust, with the right decisions made by all involved, this controversy is behind the community and the family for good. Jason, do you agree or disagree with how it was resolved? You don't have an opinion. You thought it was right in suspending him. Do you think it was right to let him play? The board overturned it and let him play. You felt they should have upheld the suspension. I'm going to be honest. I still don't know how I feel about this one. I remain conflicted. I do. Because here's why. I agree with you. I don't buy the thing that it's not a gang symbol. I don't know. I am very torn on that one. Here is a weird one, this one from the same area, Sheboygan County. City of Plymouth police say they're investigating what they believe may be a human trafficking case after finding a 16-year-old girl wandering the streets early Monday morning. Information from the girl led to a standoff, which resulted in three people being taken into custody, including the original victim. This, by the way, reporting from WBAY in Green Bay. Police say said on Monday afternoon they have a 24-year-old male in custody on charges of human trafficking, a 25-year-old male in custody on an unrelated burglary warrant, and the 16-year-old female was in custody on an unrelated juvenile warrant. Even though she's a victim here, there was a warrant out on her. She apparently was being held against her will, and they suspect this was a case of human trafficking. A while back, someone told me that I need to look into this, that this is a bigger issue in Wisconsin than people might imagine. I wasn't able to pick up a scent anywhere on the story to start looking. And what I was told sounds eerily similar to this. I don't know how big of a problem this is in Wisconsin, and I'm not going to try to say it's a big problem. I don't know. But I find it interesting that someone brought it up to me. Said, you know, there's actually issue with human trafficking in Wisconsin. And that person was going to provide me with the contact, and they never did. And I think that's where it kind of fell off. I need to revisit that now. Maybe talk with law enforcement and get their sense on that. On, you know, how big a problem is it really? All right, then there is this. As you know, Governor Scott Walker, as you probably know, maybe you don't know, I shouldn't say that. As you may know, Governor Scott Walker gives his State of the State address. I can't speak for the stations in Wausau and Sheboygan. We will be carrying it live tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, here in Green Bay. Don't know about the other stations. Governor Scott Walker is supposed to detail his plans for property tax cuts, what to do with a billion-dollar surplus, and so on. Mary Burke, the almost assured Democratic candidate to take him on, has been pushing a storyline. Even PolitiFact gave her a pants on fire for this. She's claiming that the governor wants to raise the sales tax to 13%. Here's what she's talking about. Governor Walker is exploring the possibility of getting rid of the state income tax. Now, you have to make up that revenue somehow. One of the ideas that he did not dismiss was raising the sales tax. We're going to have the governor on Thursday morning after his address. Now, my questions are going to be based on what he says Wednesday night, obviously. However, one of the things that I want to get clear from him is if he is willing to get rid of the state income tax, that we really get rid of it with a constitutional amendment. Because if Republicans just get rid of it now and generate revenue from something, I don't care what, income tax or sales tax, excuse me, or whatever, there's always a chance the income tax could come back unless you constitutionally ban it. If you don't do that, then this just continues to come back and continues to come back. We'll see what he has to say. But in the meantime, she's claiming he wants to raise the sales tax 13%. This would hurt poor people. This would cause people to shop across state lines and so on. He has proposed no such thing. What happened is there's a lot of analysis out there saying that, yeah, it would take about this much of an increase if you put it all on the sales tax. Nobody has proposed that. However, Mary Burke has had another moment in this campaign, which I think is pretty fascinating. Colin Roth writes on this at Right Wisconsin. This is a defining moment in this campaign. Mary Burke has made a statement. And this statement is one that now I think the entire gubernatorial campaign needs to be built around. Mary Burke said she doesn't think Wisconsin is a high tax state. Liberals have made this case for a long time. That's why Jim Doyle and Democrats did what they did when they had the chance, and why Governor Scott Walker and Republicans have reversed it. But they've said this forever. Well, we're not really. We're not a tax hell. That's just a conservative creation. Apparently, Mary Burke thinks she's going to ride that horse to the governor's mansion. Colin Roth writes that this is from WKOW-TV in Madison. Former Trek bicycle executive Mary Burke, who served as the state's commerce secretary under Jim Doyle, is Walker's likely Democratic opponent. If you look at, overall, all the money the state and local governments bring in from the people of Wisconsin, we're more in the middle, Burke told a gathering of Madison East Side progressives on Sunday night. Burke was responding to a question from someone at the meeting who asked how she planned to win over more conservative anti-tax voters. In terms of a state, we're not a high tax and fee state, she said. Burke did not take a position on tax cut proposal anticipated to come in the governor's speech this week. Not a high tax and fee state. Roth writes, that quote will haunt Mary Burke throughout 2014. First, Burke avoided taking a position on the $912 million revenue surge, the number one issue facing state government. Deferring on this question is a clear signal that Burke's strategists haven't yet crafted a way to spend the money and be sure they'll want to spend it. They won't want to put it toward a possible structural deficit in the next budget. They won't want to give it back to taxpayers. They will want to spend it. Second and more important, he writes, Mary Burke doesn't think Wisconsin is a high tax and fee state. Really? He then shares some statistics from the Tax Foundation. Wisconsin's top income tax rate of 7.75% ranks 10th highest in the nation. Wisconsin's 2014 business tax climate was ranked 43rd nationally, and that's with the changes Governor Scott Walker's been able to enact. Think about what it was before. Wisconsin's tax freedom day is April 20th, 11th latest nationally. The most recent rankings have Wisconsin's overall property tax collections per capita rank 12th highest nationally. But then again, Burke's experience in the Doyle administration would suggest a different definition of high taxes. The MacGyver Institute thoroughly documented Governor Doyle's record on taxes in 2010. Doyle has increased taxes just about everywhere and on everything, from taxes on iPod downloads to taxes on garbage. It would be difficult to find a tax that Doyle didn't want to increase. In the last state budget, Doyle raised taxes $2 billion and allowed local property taxes to go up an additional $1.5 billion. The previous state budget raised taxes and fees $763 million, and the fix to that budget raised taxes again $1.2 billion. Wisconsin has a long way to go in order to lower the tax burden and reform the tax structure, but at least Governor Walker and the legislature are making strong attempts to lower taxes each year. In fact, Representative Dale Coenga has made it his mission to get Wisconsin out of the bottom 10 of the Tax Foundation's rankings. Mary Burke, on the other hand, doesn't think Wisconsin taxes are very high. Her words, Colin Roth writes, not mine. So it is reasonable to predict that taxes could and would go higher under a Burke administration. That is the shot that should be heard around Wisconsin. That has got to be played again and again and again and again and again. It's 9:49.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.